come at this. I'm going to spend a few minutes and describe what we're doing in Norman that, so far, it's really working well. And the reason they've asked me to describe this is because it gives you some ideas of how you can do some things in your church someday. If you don't wind up, if you're at OU and you don't wind up staying in what we've developed, you might be able to take some of these ideas and use them in another church. So I'm going to take just a few minutes and describe this. Don't hear me saying that we're doing everything right and that everybody ought to be doing it like this. I know better than that. We're excited about what we're doing, but we know that there's other ways to do it. But I wanted to, they've asked me to give a brief description of this. Once I've done this, and then I'm going to address four basic questions. And as I thought through, what is it that you're going to deal with? I had to basically take a semester course that I developed on this subject of how do you take what you learned in college and use it out there. And out of that, I picked four things, and we will take a few minutes and look at those. And I hope that you can then take these varied, and they'll sound like disconnected ideas, but once you get out there, you'll have a little perspective on how do you get grounded, how do you get through this adjustment, how do you find your place, what is realistic ministry and discipleship look like. So, as you watch me going through my handout, I'll be turning more pages than you will. Don't get nervous. My notes are a lot more extensive than what you've got. So, to start with, a few years ago, God began to do something in Trinity Baptist Church that has really proven to be a very exciting thing. We call it impact. Let me explain what happened. Several years ago, there were some guys that had just graduated from OU. They had gotten off of the ministry team of the BSU. They might go to Vespers once in a while, but basically they had moved out of the BSU scene and were trying to find their place in the church and in the marketplace. And I noticed that nobody was taking care of these guys, and I knew them, and I was on church staff by this time, and since I'd been on BSU staff, I knew what they had gotten, and I thought, I hate to see these guys not transition this to the marketplace and to the community. So we started this Bible study with them, and it kind of limped along. It was nothing to brag about. In fact, it really, really struggled for a year or so. I jokingly say I nearly put it out of its misery. Just nothing was coming out of it. But I began to discover a few things along the way. One is, these guys did not think in terms of the standard church paradigm, which is sort people by marital status. The church tends to have singles groups and young adult groups, or at least our church does. And guess what the difference between singles and young adults is? The young adults are married. Somebody jokingly said in our church, you know, to become an adult, you have to get married. We realized our nomenclature was all messed up. And so I never thought about that. But these guys helped me see that, hey, Dave, just because we're single or married, don't sort us that way. And we begin to think about that and begin to realize that ministry doesn't have to be a singles thing. We didn't have to buy into that singles paradigm. So we backed up from that. And since we weren't really trying to create a movement, we're just trying to minister to this group of guys, we could do anything we wanted. And so we began to think differently than just singles versus couples. We started thinking in terms of just young men and women who are 20 to 30 years old. And that really worked for us. There were some girls that we began to realize they were looking for something also, and Nancy had some time, and so what we did is, simultaneous to this men's Bible study, we started a women's Bible study. It was all meeting in our house, and Nancy would, everybody would get together. We'd have our refreshments and chatter for a half an hour, and then the girls would go out to one room and have their study, and the guys would go to another. Well, when we did that, the thing exploded. We found out another thing. People, the genders like to hang out together. And so this thing started to pick up momentum. And another thing, as I mentioned, since we weren't a singles movement, we had to call ourselves something. So we found this neutral word. We called it impact. There was no real strategy. Impact isn't an acrostic that stands for something. In fact, we were just stumbling through some names, and we thought, until we find a better one, we'll call it this. And this is what it wound up being. And I'm not even sure we like that name, but we needed something neutral rather than something that designated whether people are married or not. We began to find that couples as well as singles were coming to this thing, and they were loving it. They were friends, and they didn't want me sorting them based on whether they had gotten married or not. We also found out something, and that is that in the marketplace, meaning jobs or graduate school, wherever they're at, the people they're reaching out to, they want to be able to bring those people to what they're comfortable with. If you've got a single who has just befriended somebody that's married and wants to bring them to something, if you created a singles group and a couples group, where does that single take his married friend? And we realized, we're organized poorly, at least in our scenario. I'm not saying every other church there's something inferior about that, but we started discovering that this impact thing needed to be broad enough that someone could bring their friend, regardless of whether their friend was single, married, or already divorced. And that was another thing we started running into, was people in their mid-20s who were already divorced. And we needed something broad enough that people could bring people to and find community. In time, the thing began to expand. We began to have a crowd. Yeah?
Just a question on that. It sounds like it'd also be comfortable to bring someone of the opposite sex if you actually
met
someone, because...
Happens all the time.
Okay.
So some guy will meet a girl or not. There's no romance there. It's just they're in the biology department, or they both work for the athletic department, or whatever. And we do enough together that if those two came, she doesn't have to be with strangers all night. She can be with her friend. But then when the girls go do their thing, she's glad to go be with them. It wasn't a different meeting on a different night. We began to realize also that what we were doing, which was a home ministry, it was impossible to do everything at the same time. It was impossible to have in-depth Bible study, in-depth fellowship, significant prayer, outreach events, all at one meeting. So we stopped doing that. And we broadened the ministry out. What happens in our groups that meet in homes, there we focus on the word community. We really try to create authentic, meaningful relationships. And the whole atmosphere is centered around that, because the young adults we minister to feel very isolated and disconnected. And it's a very... they want a place where relationships are stable and secure. We also want a place where God is real. They experience God, and so we pray. Prayer is not just something we open the meeting with or end it with. We spend a significant amount of time in those groups praying. A third thing we try to do is to be a safe place for people to bring new people, regardless of whether those people are believers or non-believers. And that's working very well. This last summer, when we figured it would be kind of a lull, in Norman at least, that's the lull, everybody's gone and things quiet down. We had our highest attendance this last summer, which was up around the 70s. And we were having a new person every single week. They just love bringing people to this thing. But we realized we've got to have some Bible teaching. We also realized that if all we did was home groups, that a lot of people would never hear about it. And so we created a Sunday morning Bible study for this group that looks like a Sunday school class. But our strategy is that's where we do our Bible teaching, and that's where we get people that come to church looking for a place to plug in. It's really a net that we fish with. It's worked very well for us. And so now we've got this Sunday morning event. We do a lot of inductive Bible study. And people that are looking for a good church and a good group to plug into, this is where they wind up coming. And then after they've been there a while, then they get plugged in to the home group. The home groups outgrew our house. Our house will hold about 30 people, 34 is I think the record. And so since we've outgrown that, it's given us a good reason to multiply. We've got three groups going now. We're looking at starting two more in the next few months. It has just exploded. That meant we had to train and disciple leaders. When we start a new group, we don't just send the leader out and tell him, good luck. What we do is we divide the existing group so that the new one is large enough that they can... We think of it like a mother giving birth. We want that new group to be strong enough to be viable. But we don't want to lose the mother group giving birth to the baby group. So we want both groups to be healthy once we divide. We don't split it down the middle. It's a smaller group that's given birth from a larger group. And then that larger group sees a responsibility for encouraging and nurturing that smaller group. And that's given us a venue for a lot of leadership development. And so there's a place for people to grow up in that ministry and then to start new groups. Right now, the leaders that we're developing... when we first started this, we imagined it being a place where people were coming out of the BSU and having a place to take what they learned in school and now do it in a church. Now it's grown to the place that that's going on where also we've reached enough people out that didn't come out of the BSU that about 50% of the group are non-BSU alums. And they're now being discipled, and they're now having a chance to grow in leadership. And some of our young leaders didn't come out of the issue. It's really getting exciting to see it starting to mushroom. A similar thing has happened in that on Sunday mornings, it's given us an atmosphere where we can identify young men with the gift of teaching. And I'm now mentoring these guys, and I'll give them maybe 2 months to teach and to spread their wings, learn how to do it, learn how to all this involved with effective teaching. And the hope is that they then will be able to go out of that and reproduce that somewhere else. Well, the group has become very visionary. And so ideas are, there's no shortage of ideas. Somebody came a few months ago and said, Dave, could we do the Tommy Nelson song, Solomon thing, and use it as an outreach? So last fall, we had this big deal. And we just, every Monday night, all the groups combined, and we did the song, Solomon, had record attendance. And some of those people are still with us. One of the guys said, hey, we could be doing a guys' basketball league and reaching people that way. So he started that. We started reaching people, and some of those people are still coming. One of the guys said, hey, we need to offer something for the guys that are struggling with pornography on the internet and junk like that. So they started an accountability group. Started with two or three guys. Now he's got a household. Nance, what else? The girls started this girls' night out. It's kind of a social thing for the girls. New people come to it all the time. In another few weeks, we'll be starting a prototype ministry of an evangelistic study for an apartment complex. And one of our girls is a real, let's go to the mall and cold turkey with strangers. And so she's starting to get that started. Another one of our guys spent last summer in Beirut, Lebanon, and he came back and said, could we start a world missions thing? And so in another couple of months, our group will be launching an effort to start a church in Beirut, Lebanon. Oh, the beautiful thing about it is I didn't come up with any of this. All I need to do is create an environment or an atmosphere that's going to help me. And then they come in and figure out what they want to do. And so long as it's, you know, biblical and we sense the Spirit leading, they've got a safe environment to spread their wings. Now, that's what we're doing. And it's working well for us. I'm going to lay that aside and pick up what the title of this seminar is all about. And that is, how do you take what you're learning in the BSU or in your collegiate ministry and make it work out there in the community? And then from time to time, I'll go back to what I just described to illustrate how we're trying to do it. And I want you to feel free to ask questions. This is the part where I really want us to do a dialogue, so you don't hesitate to ask. On your handout, I've given you four questions to help us organize what we're doing. And the first one, if you went to Crawford's session a couple of nights ago, he dealt with this, but the first question I wanted to present to you is this one. Why does the transition from the university universe to the real world feel like I'm stepping backwards? Here's the reason what does that have to do with the title of this workshop? How do you take what you learned in college and use it out there in the world? Okay? If you don't make that transition, that's about 2 years that's an estimate. If you don't survive that, it doesn't matter what you learn to do in college. You're not going to be doing it in the what we've nicknamed the real world. The transition is real for many people. And here's what we mean by the transition, or what one young woman came to me and said, Dave, I feel like I've taken steps backwards now that I'm out of college instead of taking steps forward. And this was a strong, fruitful young woman. She had a tremendous ministry in college. And now she's out saying, I feel like I'm not going anywhere. Well, I've heard enough people say that, I figured I've got to analyze this. And this is what I've come up with. Many young men and women mention that they feel like they've taken a step backwards when they graduate from the university and enter the real world. What they're describing is the inevitable adjustment that they experience when they make major changes in life. Another way of looking at that is nearly every time you make a major change in life, plan on something like this happening. It may not be quite as dramatic, but plan on there being this period of adjustment, and just factor that in. But most of us don't get out of school expecting that, and so it catches us by surprise. Let's look at what life in college is like for most students. And this will help you understand why there's this big adjustment. First of all, college for some is little more than an extension of adolescence. It's like a glorified high school. I mean, I worked with college students for 13 years, and I hope this isn't true for all of you. Sometimes it was just a junior in college was just 4 years older than the average high school kid. I mean, he just still acted like that. You realize we weren't necessarily dealing with adult thinking. It was very adolescent in its culture. So it's artificial, it's unrealistic, it doesn't necessarily require a mature judgment. Time, money, relationships, spirituality, and recreation are far different than they will be in a few months when you're out of school. A sobering question that a student needs to ask himself is, am I an adult or am I simply an older adolescent? And really answer that question. A second observation about college life is that college is planned and structured by someone else. I mean, you look at college, you may declare a major, but even that, it's all mapped out for you. Somebody else is probably paying for it. I mean, you look at how much you are really responsible for it. For some of you, there isn't much. I'm not saying there's something wrong with it. I'm just saying that when you get out of school, you have to figure everything out. And for some people, it's like riding in an airplane and getting ready to parachute. There's a lot of racket and a lot of the adrenaline is high while they're waiting to jump out of the plane, but the plane is giving them a lot of safety, which is what college does. And then they jump out of the plane for their first skydive, and suddenly they're hit by this wind that's 160 miles an hour, and it free fall, and they're wondering, I hope this thing works. And that's the shock that tends to happen to people. And some of this is because college is already, everything's figured out. The third thing for many, spiritual growth in college is like being on steroids. And when you get out, you'll see what I mean by this. Growth is active, it's rapid, and it's enthusiastic. You have got so much offered to you. You get to come to things like this really several times a year. I know for OU, you had one in January, you've got one in March, you'll do something. Some of you go to O Week in May and will spend the summer in Cambodia. I mean, there's always all of this stuff going on. And you're soaking it up, and then you get out and you wonder, what has just happened? It's not there anymore. Or it feels like that. So, a question you need to ask yourself is, how much of what you're doing spiritually in college is really conviction? And how much of it is just, you're just accommodating to what the group is emphasizing? Now, there's nothing wrong with what the group is doing. It's just that once it's no longer there, how much are you still doing? How much of that do you own? Here's what tends to happen when you enter the real world. When many of you merge into the real world, you begin to reassess your identity, your purpose, your values, your talents, and your adequacy to face life as an adult. Adequacy is going to be a big one. Do I have what it takes? It's only natural to experience a spiritual slowdown once you step out of the intensity of the university environment. It's natural to interpret this reduction in pace and pressure as a spiritual floundering, or worse, you feel like a failure sometimes. The spiritual activities that are most affected by this transition, well, my observation of this, your Bible intake, your quiet times will slow down, your scripture memory may totally stop, your personal Bible study may not exist anymore. For a lot of you, it's really going to slow down. Evangelism may really be reduced. One-on-one mentoring. If you're meeting with somebody, an older student or a staff person, you get out, that's over. And just impromptu fellowship, just hanging out with people. Once you're in the marketplace, you just don't have time to do that like you did when you were on campus, especially if you were living in a residence hall. And you'll feel so disconnected. The truth of the matter is likely that young adults who are going through this aren't really stepping backwards. They're simply adapting to a new life environment. In time, they're going to find that their spiritual growth normalizes and it continues if they'll hang in there. Men, An interesting thing tends to happen to us. Maybe it happens to the girls, but since I focus on the guys, I've seen these kind of things happen during this transition. Some guys go through real theological uncertainty, things they really didn't wrestle with in college. Now they're really, they're issues for them. Some guys go through real denominational loyalty. Some have emotional reactions. Some go into depression. Some have health problems. Some have get into moral compromise. And internet pornography, guys, is the big one that they tend to slip into because it's so available. It's so tantalizing. I've seen some guys actually go through sexual identity issues. And as I mentioned before, this sense of inadequacy. I'm not saying everybody deals with that. I'm just saying it. Once you get out, these things that you might have wondered about in college, now you wrestle with. And the reason I say this isn't to scare people as much as you say, don't be surprised if that happens. Here's what I would suggest you do during the first, I'm going to say, 2 years, once you leave the collegiate ministry. Don't panic. This transition is normal. It too will pass. Second is stick to the spiritual basics you learned in college. Keep your quiet time fresh. You may need to make some adjustments, but keep it fresh. Keep your prayer life and stay connected to a small group of healthy believers. Be flexible enough, though, to embrace change and growth. Stay close to a friend and to a good church. And if problems arise, gang, get help instead of just thinking, well, I'll just deal with it myself. I've watched people that didn't get help, and they're not walking with God. So, the basic principle. First Samuel 30, verse 6. Says, moreover, David was greatly distressed because the people spoke of stoning him, for all the people were embittered, each one because of his sons and daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. Plan up during that first 2 years after you're out of school. Master the art of strengthening yourself in the Lord. Let me take a couple of questions on that.
So, according to we say stay close with friends and take the church, that should be a factor in choosing where you're going to work or you're going to live, because you may go somewhere where you're fully isolated. So, would you say that is a good thing to factor into your criteria?
Yeah. The more I look at it, it depends on who you are. And depends on where you're going. I'm reluctant to tell somebody, don't take a job in Cleveland if it's something he spent 7 years training for and then has had an internship with that corporation and now he's given a job. But I would tell him, when you get there, get plugged into a church soon. Now, that doesn't mean the first one you come across. Sometimes certain cities, it's tough to find something. Find a church where the Bible is being taught well on Sunday mornings. The second thing I look for is find a place where there's real community, especially for young adults. And it'll probably be a singles group. That, you know, you've heard what I said about what we're doing in Norman, and it's not singles, but that doesn't mean singles groups are bad. But the thing to look for is not how exciting they are, it's how, what is the level of koinonia, of genuine community that goes on there. And then, on a larger scale, does the church have that? Now, here's why it's so critical. The longer you wait to plug into a church, the longer you're dealing with all this transition stuff all by yourself. The second thing to realize is that plugging into a church, it takes you time to really get connected to the church. My personal experience is it's been roughly a year. Every time I've joined a new church, it's taken me roughly a year to feel like I was really connected, which means that my heart was knit to some other believers. I had really come close. Well, I factor that in now. That's why I don't move churches anymore. I pity, we had a girl come to Impact a month and a half ago. She has visited 10. She's been a grad student at OU now for three semesters. She has visited 10 different churches in Norman. Now, I mean, it says something about the churches in Norman or about this girl of hope, but I thought, what a pity. That means she's not close to anyone. And it may take a while to find this church, but pray that God would help you find it soon. And then don't worry about finding a perfect church. They don't exist. Find a good church and make it better. But get connected as soon as you can. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we get into some of the other questions.
Well, part of getting connected is you have to choose to get into a smaller group, whether you join the choir or you consistently go on a Wednesday night, they have a Wednesday night thing or something. So there's a smaller context that you can get to know people and begin to identify with them. Because if you only go to the worship service or only go on Sunday morning, you won't feel that connection.
Though, and what Nancy said is absolutely right, the relational connection, it's a small group where that happens. However, if you skip church every other week, either because you're just slough it off or you're out of town all the time, you will also find yourself feeling like you're not connected. There's something about showing up for the formations that makes, even though you didn't bond with people, you bonded with that movement, that body. There was something about identifying with that regularly. So I tell our people, hey, show up for church. It bonds you to this body in the identity sense, not the relational sense, but the identity sense. There was a question over here.
What do you do about like the relations you have now? Like the guy you are tied in with, do you want to transition away from them? As you start to find new community, so that's...
Are you talking about you guys are now geographically separated? Does that mean like you move on to wherever he's still back in school or?
Well, I would think in that case, if you move geographically, then you'd want to transition. But say you're not. Say it's just maybe some are still in school, but you're still close by geographically, or maybe you're both graduated. I mean, just things are going different ways. You want to just try to start transitioning away from those logs?
I don't know that I'd describe it as transitioning away from your friends. I think that's going to naturally happen if they're moving one direction and you're moving another. That's not a fault with the friendship. It's just natural. Most of us, we know how to make friendships. We also need to learn how to let them go when you come to that Y in the road. That's not necessarily a conflict. It's just a process of we're now moving in different directions. So what I would suggest somebody do is stay close to those guys, go hang out with them. But as you give your heart to this new set of friends over here in the church, while your friend may be back here still involved with the collegiate ministry, while you guys are still... You still affirm each other, you're close to each other, you're beginning to, you now are starting to hook your heart up to a new set of guys, and it's only going to be natural that you spend more and more time with them. But that doesn't mean you discard your old friend, and do it gradually over time. You still need your friend, and he probably still needs you, so... Let's move on to these next questions, because I know a lot of what we do is going to keep coming back to some common things, but I since the question we've been given in this, the title is, how do you take what you learned in college and use it in making disciples once you get out of school? One of the questions you've got to deal with is, once you join a church, how do you earn the right to initiate change in that church? And change, I'm not talking about radical change, as much as how do you gain the right to take what you learned at USC, and now you're free to do that. You're welcome to do that in your local church. Let me give you some thoughts on it. First of all, realize church ministry tends to be a lot slower than the university ministry. That doesn't mean it's bad. It's just they're two different, very different paradigms. And so recognize that churches change slower than BSUs do. A BSU can change on a dime. A church, it takes several years to change. Well, allow for that. Second thing is, church ministry is very broad in its focus. You've got a nursery on one end, and you've got nursing home ministry on the other. You've got singles, you've got couples, you've got parents, you've got homeless people, you've got millionaires. You've got this very broad thing, whereas in a collegiate ministry, it's very homogeneous. And so your church has got to have this very broad ministry. Like it or not, many churches have a bias towards couples rather than singles. You'll find that to be true in a lot of places. And so if you're not married yet, just face that. But church leaders also tend to be reluctant to entrust leadership to young men and women who have not yet demonstrated loyalty to that church. Underline, capitalize the word loyalty. Now, how do you test loyalty? Four-letter word. T-I-M-E. So before you can move into a church and take what you learned at OU and now offer it in a welcome way in that church, you're going to have to give that church some time. And I'm going to suggest 2 years just to help you imagine. Now, that's not a scientific thing. That's just a... But where you realize, hey, I'm not stepping in here and changing anything. I'm going to move into what they've got and then let God in time show me my place. And then if there's a contribution I can make, I'm going to earn the right to offer that service to that church by demonstrating several things. One is, I'm going to be a servant to that church. They will have seen me offer to help out with things that as a greeter, as a help with a building and grounds project. They just know, hey, this guy is a servant. They've watched you be patient. They've watched you be consistent. And they've seen a positive attitude. In contrast to somebody who walks in and saying, this church is just not making disciples. When in the world are you guys going to get it right? Let me tell you how we did it in Norman when I was at school at OU. Pastor, I think you need to meet Max. And let me tell you how to do this right. Gang, that will not win the hearts. That will not put you in good standing. See, I don't want to... Church leaders don't like young people come along and tell them how to do things if they've been doing it 20 years. And I don't. I'm probably more flexible than the average guy. But if you understand that you need to earn the right to be heard, once you earn that right, gang, assuming it's a healthy church and healthy leadership, they will let you do almost anything. Once you've earned that right, you can go to the church leadership and say, hey, listen, when I was in school, we did a thing called one-on-one with God. And it's kind of a discipleship thing. I'd like to offer that in our church. Would that be okay? Or hey, I've been teaching in the youth for the last 2 years, but I've really got a burden to try something in this church like we did back in my church when I was in college. Would you pray about the possibility of me and three of my friends starting a thing, and we'll call it Impact? Or, you see what I'm describing? You've earned the right. So just plan on doing that. Hey, another thing to keep in mind when it comes to change, most of you are upperclassmen, I guess. Think of ministry and think of your as a food chain. Well, when you're a junior or senior at USC and you're in the collegiate ministry, you're at the top of the food chain. That means you're already a leader, and all you had to do is be there for 4 years. But then you graduate and join a church, guess where you are? You're at the bottom of their food chain. And so it's just going to take you a while to start moving up the kind of the spiritual rankings so that you are trusted and respected enough that then you can then start having ministry. Questions on that?
So it sounds like you describe a theoretical 2 year period where people will be going through all these adjustments and trying to figure out how to walk with God in that framework of the world, real world. But there's also this period of time, and once I join a church, it's kind of hard to practice what I already knew from the college ministry and do that in the real world. How do you, what would you do in that in between time? You want to disciple people, but the church may not support you during that time, or you want to be discipled yourself.
The fourth question gets at that.
Okay.
And so, let me hit the third one. And this one is, well, really the third and the fourth one get it. You get out of school, you join a church, you're kind of regaining your balance spiritually, you're trying to earn your right to be heard, and so on and so forth. A third question then that comes is, where do I find someone that I can disciple? And let me talk about a simple, simple idea. If you understand, I'm so grateful that someone passed this on to me. In my early 20s, I have used this for 30 years now, and it is, Jesus did it, Paul did it. And it's this idea of creating a fishing pool. What do we mean by that? A fishing pool is a group ministry which attracts people, keeps them involved, and it challenges them spiritually. It's this pool of people. To get real concrete, what structure in the average American church tends to fit this description? Sunday school. I am not a fan of Sunday school. I came from the generation that Mike came from. We are anti-establishment. And I want to tear it all down and replace it with something. Do you know something? You know what? I'm an avid. I put a lot of my week's work into, and it is a Sunday school lesson. Because people come to church. And so while they're at church, they'll go to a small group Bible study. And I found out that I will create, and our group is about this size, if I will invest in that, and I will make that a consistently healthy group experience, people will come and they'll bring their friends. Now, I'm a real man-to-man disciple. That's my style. But I invest a disproportionate amount of time in the group. Here's why. People come to the group and they're helped by the group. And so to some extent, they're discipled in that group. The group is healthy. But I'm watching the people in that group and asking the question, who's ready for more? So I'll use Eric, for example. Eric was ready for more. Eric was hungry. He'd been through some rough times in the previous 2 years. He's decided, I'm ready to get on with it. He's got gifting in the area of teaching. So what I do is I throw out this bait to Eric, which is the idea of, Eric, I'll give you more if you're willing to pay the price. Eric rose to the occasion and said, I'll take it. So now I meet with Eric at Panera Bread once a week, and I'm discipling him. Eric's got the gift of teaching. And so now I'm saying, Eric, let me show you what I do to teach. And I will invest the next year of my life in training you to teach. So that wherever you go, you can use that gift. I've scooted over and he taught some more. He's teaching for the next 2 weeks. Normally what we do is we let somebody substitute for us while we're out of town. So we have no way of critiquing him. What I'm doing with Eric is I'm saying, Eric, you've got the next 2 months. I'm going to be there. Here's the 3-page evaluation I'm going to fill out on you every week. We'll meet at Panera, debrief on how you did, and we're going to learn how to teach. Well, what have I done? Eric's just one of numerous guys that they came into the pool, I threw out the bait, found something more to give them, but when I reel them in, and it's the idea of I'm now pulling him closer and training him more. I don't pull him out of that group, but rather I take what I've trained him to do and I let him invest it back in the group. The group now is better for it. The fishing pool is a healthy place. Some discipling ministries have this idea of you want to go into your local church, find the healthy people and pull them out of the church. You almost rescue them from this apathetic church so you can really disciple them. There might be times where that's necessary. I think that's sheer stupidity. I don't rescue them out of my church. I train them so they can invest back into my church, and the church now is a healthier place. So I don't pit man to man against small group. I just see it as they both have to be there, and I want that fishing pool to be a healthy place. Point being, some of you are very good at creating fishing pool ministries. You need to do that. Some of you aren't. So what you do is you find somebody who is good at creating a fishing pool, you team up with them, and while they're creating this group ministry, you're helping them by maybe specializing more and more on the one-on-one stuff. If you will think like that, you can take what you learned about making disciples in your university ministry and do it in your local church. Impact is a fishing pool ministry. That's all it is. And then we're trying to help people who understand discipling take the people that are hungry while keeping them involved in the ministry. Questions on that?
How would you deal with your new person when you come into something like a Bible study, Sunday school, let's say, and you begin to connect with some of the people there, and they see your few steps ahead, want to learn from you more, so you begin to disciple them. How do you deal with if the leadership there doesn't like that because they haven't built the trust in you yet? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. That might happen, but you know something? If you and the people you're discipling are positive about that church, they're positive about that ministry, they find ways of helping in areas that they serve as greeters, which is a strategic ministry, gang. That's not a frivolous thing. You only get one chance to make a good first impression. And if you want to have a young adult ministry, get your young adults out there in the doorways so as new people are arriving, they can make that impression. Well, if a church sees you serving as greeters, if a church sees you helping you and your people that you're discipling, you help at Vacation Bible School. You show up at some at the church supper. They see you there. They're not going to. They probably aren't going to resist you. They're going to let you do anything you want to do. At least in our church, that's the way it is. Impact is a welcome ministry because because the attitudes of that group are incredible. The attitudes towards the congregation are incredible.
What if most of the people you're dealing with are people from work that aren't believers? It seemed like, how would that look? Would it be a different kind of fishing pool? Or your time, I mean, it would seem like it would be away from those kind of groups and necessarily church activities if you're spending time with.
Yeah, and in that sense, the fishing pool, as I described it here, is more of a, how do you find a healthy Christian that's wanting more training and discipling and that kind of thing. What you're talking about is more an evangelistic thing.
Yeah.
And there's where I wish in 5 minutes we had left there was an answer to that. You walk with Jesus and let Him answer that question. Some people start Bible studies at work. Where we're at, I don't know of any of that that's going on. It's not that it doesn't work, it's just, it's pretty much a one-to-one thing, and you just walk with Jesus and
so with that,
relate to people.
With that, if that pulls you away from those kind of other fishing pools, like church activities, or should you still want to make sure a lot of your time is still invested in, like, swimming pools and those kind of things?
Well, the basic answer to that is you walk with Jesus and let Him in. There's not a cookie cutter. A lot of this is, there might be a period of time you have to invest more with the guys at the office because they're open and responsive. But as you do this, make sure that, imagine it like this. Have some guys back in the church that you're well connected with that are kind of holding the ropes as you scale down the cliff to rescue some people. Versus you're doing this maverick thing over here. You're kind of just independent, disconnected, and I'm going to go do my thing without anybody supporting you, praying for you, encouraging you, sending emails and checking on how you're doing. I think that guy generally is in a risky position. But you may find that this thing you're focusing on at the office place, after a couple of 3 months, it kind of adjusts, and now you move back. Life is pretty fluid. You've got to get used to that. You just walk with Jesus, and it makes sense. Our time's basically up. With 3 minutes, let me share a simple idea in answer to this fourth question, and that is, why doesn't, you will probably join a church and find yourself asking this question, why doesn't my church make disciples? Well, for one thing, it just may not be making disciples. But it might not be that they're not making disciples as much as you have a very, very narrow understanding of biblical discipleship. Let me, as simply as I know how to explain this, show you what you've heard and been taught in college and how that compares with the way the normal church does it. I use this way of describing these two paradigms. One paradigm of making disciples is what we call, or what I call, I make disciples. Generally, the proof text on this is 2 Timothy 2:2, which, the things that you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, these instruct the faithful men who will be able to teach others also. And then the diagram I've given you, I don't know how many hundred times I've seen this diagram used. If you work with two people, train them, they in turn work with two people, train them, who they in turn work with two people, you can reach the world. Well, it works fine on paper. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work yet. Except in the area of basic follow-up, it can work that way. And in leadership development, it tends to work fairly clearly and distinctly that way. But just basic ongoing disciple-making, what you're going to find is not everybody turns around and passes it on like the diagram shows. Now, this is not a bad paradigm, it's just not the only paradigm you see in the Word of God. There's another one I refer to as we make disciples. Now, here the idea, if you use a basic text, Hebrews 10:24 and 25, let us, and see the word us, there's not the idea of this older person teaching a younger person, it's the idea of all of us in this group are responsible for each other. Let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. That means how you make disciples of the other people in this group. Not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together. Now, this paradigm is the normal church paradigm. If it's working well, I'm not saying all churches do this well, but I'm just saying this is the normal pattern you see in the New Testament. It uses the idea of one another's, and it uses the idea of spiritual gifts. It would imagine us being a church. And in that sense, if all of us were doing our part, we would have a shared responsibility for everyone in this group. If someone strayed away, we'd go get them. If someone is hurting, we'd heal them. If someone has promise of leadership or further ministry, we'd be advancing them. All of us would have that kind of part, but not all of us would be doing the very same thing. What we'd be contributing is what God uniquely gifted us at. And so one of you is going to be a servant. Servants may be able to do that first paradigm, but generally they work better in the second paradigm. There are some of you that have been trying to do it in college, and it's struggling, and what you're going to find is when you get into church, that your gift was more suited to this second paradigm. And if you can find a congregation where this is really understood and this is really taught, what you'll do is you will get involved, and as a team, that group will disciple the people in that group. The difficulty with the second paradigm is you can't take personal credit for it. You know, back when I was in college doing the first paradigm, I could say, now these are my three guys. And they've got three guys. You know, I could draw it out on paper and list these names. When you're doing this, the group gets the credit. But the beautiful thing about it is that it's not individuals that you're multiplying, it's groups that you're multiplying. And that's what we're seeing with Impact. So, if you just understand these two biblical ways of looking at it, then when you answer the question, how do I take what I learned at USC or OU and use it in the real world, you may be taking the skills you learned in this first paradigm and adapting them to the second paradigm, and you're still going to be making disciples. It's just going to look a little bit different. But you're still doing what the Bible says to do about taking people from spiritual birth. The spiritual material.